From the center of the universe, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, this is the SDM Show with your host, Rob Cairns. The SDM Show focuses on business, life, productivity, digital marketing, WordPress, and more. Sit back, relax, grab your favorite drink, and enjoy the show. Here is Rob.
Hey, everybody. Rob Cairns here. I'm the founder, CEO, and chief creator of Amazing Ideas at Stunning Digital Marketing. In this podcast, which was originally done as a live to Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, we sit down, Devinder Singh Ken, Ryan Waterbury, and Todd Jones and I, and we talk about WordPress in review for the year 2021. It's been a really interesting year with everything from mergers and acquisitions to the community. Please bear with some of the bad audio that I had in the first half hour of this recording, but the information was so good, we just kind of rolled with it and dealt with that. So sit back, relax, grab a drink or two. You're going to want one, and maybe some popcorn, and enjoy this podcast. Morning, everybody. We are live with WordPress in review for 2021. I have a panel with me today. Let's start off with Devinder Singh Ken of WP. Good morning, Devinder.
Hey, good morning. How are you people in different parts of the world?
Doing good.
Good morning, Devinder. How are you? The internet is going to be in my gremlins already this morning, which is so wonderful.
Well, you need an update.
How are you this morning, Todd? Yeah, thank you very much. And we have Todd Jones of Copy Flight. Good morning, Todd.
Yeah, good morning. I'm definitely better than I was yesterday. I pretty much either was laying in a recliner or bed all day yesterday. So I feel better today. And I was just counting my lucky stars that I could actually be well enough to jump on this call. So somebody must have prayed for me, and it must have worked. So here I am.
Yeah. And Ryan Waterbury of One Dog Solutions. Good morning, Ryan.
How are you today?
So let's jump into one of my most favorite topics in this past year, and that's WordPress mergers and acquisitions. Ryan, it looks like I'm having in Roger's internet blips this morning. Lucky me. So, Ryan, do you want to talk about mergers and acquisitions and start in your feelings of that and the impact on the community?
Mergers and acquisitions. It's kind of interesting simply for the fact that I think this is a good indication that WordPress has moved to not just your blogger's platform for sharing your favorite recipes. It's now powering some really powerful enterprise websites out there. So the mergers and acquisitions and the business dealings really show some maturity in the market. So that's good and bad. And I think some of us that run small agencies, boutique agencies in particular, are starting to feel a little, the squish a little bit. WordPress, used to have a pretty low bar of entry for development. That's changed, drastically. You could get by with a little bit of PHP, CSS, HTML, and a little bit of JavaScript. Now you really have to be, to do anything impactful, you need to be a full stack developer to really push things. So as we see these acquisitions, we're seeing whole teams purchased. And, you know, I like to, you know, I've looked at the Nexus Stellar WP acquisitions in particular. And one thing that really kind of just clicked in my mind was a comment that Paul Lacy had made where he said, you know, you've got block lock-in. And, you know, I looked at Nexus Stellar WP in their acquisitions, you know, and they're building a platform. And especially when you look at the last one where Modern Tribe itself was purchased, I kind of stepped back and I looked and I said, hey, this is kind of got the jive of the same criticism that, you know, Matt Medeiros pointed out with WordPress.com that, hey, we'll develop your website.
Yeah.
It felt to me like they're very large platforms being put together, and you know, WordPress.com is one, you know, with pushing the Gutenberg project. And then you look at, you know, I just picked on Nexus, and it's not a bad thing. I mean, that's a great solution for somebody coming in, but as a small agency that's, you know, put together a care solution in my own stack to offer a platform, you really start to feel the squeeze a little bit. So you know, it's not a good or a bad thing. It just means we have to adapt. So,
yeah. So true. Devinder, what's your two cents on all these running the news site WP Weekly and talking about WordPress on mergers and acquisitions?
I think it's a good thing because more money means more serious decision making, and only those features will go through that will sell and that will be used by people. Obviously, there's a school of thought, like Ryan pointed out, that the small agency boutique owners might feel threatened that, like, now they're almost wiping out the one-man plugin developer thing. But even if people get acquired, there will be 10 more people waiting to launch a new thing, right? And it's a good thing because now even this Stellar WP, you know, building a bouquet of plugins, I think WP Engine also has tried the same thing with Genesis, which I think kind of failed. And now they're trying to do with blocks and all that stuff. So yeah. If you see these two pillars like Stellar WP and WP Engine, they are basically challenging what WordPress.com does. Mm-hmm. And as a user of WordPress and even my clients, they will feel more at home buying stuff from Stellar WP and WP Engine rather than WordPress.com because they still don't know what the positioning or branding of WordPress.com because it's as ambiguous, as confusing as we know between .org and .com. So acquisitions are good and everyone is trying their best. Even GoDaddy acquired Pagely and no one even thought in their wildest dream they will acquire something like Pagely, right? But they did it. And if the sense prevail, they will just keep Pagely as a separate premium offering and, you know, expand their offering. Because again, there are people who will say, oh, GoDaddy is bad and all that, but they still got money and money came from customers, right? Mm-hmm. It didn't come from charity, right? So they are in a big business. So acquisition, I think it's a good for whole ecosystem because more money that comes into the ecosystem, more serious people will get and more, you know, SOPs and more structured, everyone will be like, you will have a copywriter also rather than just a developer writing a copy. Right, Todd?
Yeah, and that brings me to Todd. Hey, Todd, what is your feelings on all the mergers and acquisitions going on?
Well, I think Devinder and Ryan really nailed a lot of the stuff that I would say as well. What I see, you know, a few years ago, I was writing articles in the startup space here in Arkansas. And so I saw a lot of the same thing in the startup tech community, 8-10 years ago. A lot of maturity going on. People were buying. There was a kid who did an app in the UK, I think, a few years ago. And I think Yahoo or somebody bought it for a couple $1 billion. I mean, you know, just some of these massive acquisitions. I think a couple things to keep in mind. And I agree with everything they said. Spot on. I think it's a sign of maturity of our market, the WordPress market, something that Ryan was pointing out. I think the two things I'd like to see is the ability to stay nimble, which means innovation. So a point that the vendor made is, you know, sure, one thing gets acquired and maybe there's 10 more people ready to build something else. We've always got to keep building. There's got to be individuals keep building. The big companies will handle the support really well, probably better than the small companies will, which is why we need it. But they need to, they really need to keep developing the product as long as they can, but they really need to handle the support, because support is an area that is tough for small groups to do. Number two, and he mentioned Paul Lacy, and I think Paul hit the nail on the head with his article at the WP Minute a couple weeks ago about community. One of the things that made WordPress so important in the last 10 years, I think for every single one of us in this call, is community, both good and bad, obviously. But we all find a sense of community somewhere in the WordPress ecospace. Whether, you know, I know like Devinder, at one time I was hanging out with all the Genesis people. I watched Carrie Deals' office hours. That's where I first saw Devinder. Carrie was very nice to me and a lot of questions I had. The early days before I really was in the WordPress community, I bought the WordPress for Dummies book by Lisa Sabin Wilson. And I would ever consider her a hero, even though I've never met her, really talked to her. You know, along the way, I've met some really cool people, the Joe Casabanas of the world, the Kim Doyles, the Jennifer Bournes. Some of these people have been really nice and given me feedback or just, you know, advice or just supporting what I've done. We have to keep that somehow as we mature as a community. I don't know that I have the answer per se, but there are some people in our community that are very good about community support, and we need to look to them for leadership. I'm thinking like Michelle Frechette, who is really good at customer support, but that is drawn from her ability to facilitate a community. We have to keep looking to people like Michelle to help keep the sense of community in the WordPress space. Maybe Paul Lacy is part of that as well. So those are two things I would like to see WordPress hold on to as a community. Obviously, that doesn't really come from Automattic. Automattic's doing what they do. And I have put a client on a WordPress.com site, and it works really well for that client and what they need. And then, of course, as it goes, I think everybody's all, we all get into this thing as a developer. I mean, I was doing WordPress websites, still do. I just try not to do them so much. I try to send them to you guys. But I went more to the copy content space because I felt like there was a need there in the community. But I think we're going to see more people that are kind of boutique agencies change directions and find a way that fits. Ryan is a good example of this. I mean, he still does builds, but he's kind of adopted the web care. And a lot of people are like Ryan. And then the vendor just kind of, he's kind of like the design guy. You know, many people will say, hey, Devinder, I need a new design, or I need to design this particular landing page. And he does that. And then, of course, he does his own internal projects, which we all love and support. So I think everybody's going to be looking for an angle. And that's the beauty of a matured ecosystem, right? There's all these different corners that become something that you can make a living off of. So it's not a bad thing. As long as we keep those two things in mind, community and being able to keep innovating.
Yeah, I would agree, Todd. And I was going to save the community angle for later in this chat, but I think I'll jump into it now. One of the big projects I'm involved in right now, and I'm going to throw out a shameless plug because the is and I think we need to keep building the community and keep working on community in a big way. And we have some issues in the WordPress community right now, by far. So anybody want to tackle that, please? And thank you.
Well, I'm assuming we were having a hard time hearing you, but you're talking about the LinkedIn.
I was saying we were working on a LinkedIn initiative to build the WordPress community on LinkedIn. And I think part of our problem is people keep blaming the issues in the community and not the people. And I think some of this needs to stop. I mean, it didn't, and I'm going to tackle this, and I'm going to be the most favorite person in the sport right now. Sorry, guys, I'm obviously having some issues, but I was going to say it didn't hurt that Chris Lemmick came out on Twitter and said he was a gatekeeper of WordPress, which I humbly disagree with, and you can take your shots at me now, folks.
You know,
but anybody want to go there?
I think verbatim he said, of course I'm a gatekeeper for CobblePress, and as he should be,
yeah.
And that's directly what he said. But I alluded to this with the barrier of entry into WordPress, you know, with the development skills. So, you'd find bloggers a long time ago when WordPress was still maturing that, oh, I need to add this function my functions.php file. Oh, okay, I need to tweak this, add a little CSS, and then next year, you're a full-blown WordPress developer after you've, you know, gained a couple of skills. It wasn't that difficult to start contributing to core and really doing some cool things. Now, the complexity of all the different languages involved in writing a plugin to do things and which route you choose is pretty vast. And so when we talked about the acquisitions, I think it's good because those companies can afford to employ developers that are specific in their area of expertise, whether it's front end or back end development and designers. I mean, that's really what separates the small one person shops like myself. I do development, design, marketing, everything from the larger agencies that have a staff of 10 that, you know, have a project manager, a marketing person, the front end developer, the back end developer, the designers that really specialize. So I think that gap has widened a little bit, and that sense of community where somebody that just wants to go in and tinker and get themselves online, you can still do that. And I think for a time, starting in 2014, 2015, with the advent of page builders, that really just kind of leapt forward a whole another step with nice tools to do those things. And I'm bringing up page builders because I think that's been a shattering thing in the community with Gutenberg, that we look at Automattic, the parent company of WordPress.com. And the CEO there, obviously one of the founders of WordPress.org, those lines get blurred a little bit. And there are people out there that aren't in our community that, equate WordPress.com with .org, and they don't know any different. That's one thing that I wanted to touch on here, where I really see that that's a conflict of interest, having Matt heading up both projects. The private company and the public org. Core has fallen behind as far as there's some things that really should be taken care of, while Gutenberg, which fully benefits WordPress.com, has taken the driver's seat in the development. And I think the community, small agencies like myself, feel the pinch there and that disconnect, and that's been one of the wedges that that we've seen. So I'm looking forward to the state of the word to see how some of these things are addressed and you know how Matt talks to the community there. So I think the community is still there, but you know, it's a tool. I've used Drupal, Magento, BigCommerce, Shopify, reluctantly, but it's just a tool to get online. There are other ways to do things, but the community, I mean, I love going to meetups, and I will tell you, working with other marketing folks, nobody wants to share any tips, tricks, or anything of that to really do things. But when I go to a WordPress meetup, people will actually share code and tell you how to do something specifically without any reservation. I don't think in any other community, any of the CMS groups, that I've felt that nice, forward-thinking, community-led, just the sharing of knowledge anywhere else besides WordPress. And I think that's changing a little bit.
I would agree. Devinder, your 2 cents, please.
I think WordPress community is alive and thriving. And regarding Chris Limmer, I think he is one of the inspiring people in the community. You may not agree with everything he says, but he definitely says a lot of right things. Obviously, he has to balance his, you know, position as a person working for a company and also as a person, as a user of WordPress. Now, coming to WordPress community, I think it's alive and kicking. Like how there was a big backlash with blocks, like it's not for me. So if there wasn't a community, why would you hear negative voices, right? And even I didn't like the concept of blocks when it came out, but now as it has matured, I think I like it, but I like it more because I understand code. But from my client perspective, they still don't understand, and I'm not surprised. And most of my clients use Beaver Builder, and they say, when Beaver Builder is working, why should I use blocks, right? And no one has time to learn something new when something that they are using is already working perfectly fine. So that is the bigger issue, because blocks started as a, you know, fancy editor like Wix has, Squarespace has, but now it's stepping into the territory of page builders. Again, if you step back and look, blocks is basically creating the same ecosystem as page builders has. Like, they are different page builders and they are different add-ons for every page builder. And now we have a page builder called Gutenberg, and they are different add-ons for the page builder called Gutenberg. So it's like we're creating a parallel, you know, what do you call it, economy? Like, even for plugins, like someone was saying, oh, I should have a block for this functionality. Now, ideally, we have a plugin for a functionality, and now we have a block for a functionality. So again, a more parallel economy being created. But I think blocks now, as of today, I think it's a good direction. But and I really like that they did postpone the full site editing release and all that, because it was really rushed up, and because that will have bigger impact on people who were not using a page builder and using a default theme. Some things will break. So yeah, community is still there, because if there wasn't community, even we wouldn't be talking to each other, right? So community is there, but community is only between people who build a website. It doesn't, you know, drip to our clients, because it won't, because that is not where the community should be. And yes, there are shifts in changes, like now there are more paid communities within the whole community, you know, and I sort of like this direction. And if you see the Facebook groups, most of them have dried up in terms of healthy interactions, because there's too much spam. And then there's a LinkedIn group, which you've recently created, and I got surprised for that. And yeah, I think community is doing great. And even though people don't, there are people who would say, I don't like Gutenberg and all that, but eventually everyone will fall in line. But that's how it is. Like, when you build a foundation, people have to build a house on that foundation. They just cannot build a new foundation. So that's the problem. And I always tell everyone in WordPress, like, WordPress is not always an answer. I use a lot of things other than WordPress to power my business, and I'm not sorry for them. I'm not sorry for that decision. I'm actually happy for that decision, because WordPress is not always an answer for you. So you got to choose your tools according to your capacity, according to your capabilities, and according to the time that you want to save, because time is money. Because in the end, everyone is here to make money, even automatic. I think Rob froze listening to my speech.
I think everything you said was spot on there, Devinder.
So true. Yeah, I would agree. So let's jump into another topic, AI in WordPress. And that applies even more to copy editing. So let's start with Todd. What are your thoughts?
I was coughing when you said that. So you're talking about what, man? WordPress?
AI, artificial intelligence.
Artificial intelligence.
You know, it depends on the day whether I like it or not. I don't regularly use it. There's a lady that you had on podcast, but I don't think you talked about AI with Breyer. She is a copywriter in the copywriting community who uses AI. And so it's a debate in the copywriting community. Some people are very threatened by it, just kind of like page builders when they came out in WordPress. You know, it's like all of a sudden, you know, you don't need a developer. You just buy a page builder and you can do what you need to do. The problem with I don't know if there's a problem with AI, but I don't think AI is ever going to write a long form article. But AI can help you with your headlines and they can help you word things better. Heck, Grammarly's basically had AI in it for years now, and all the other writing aids, they use AI to help you write it better, make it sound better, make it more grammatically correct. We all need that, I think, to some degree. When you do copywriting, I mean, a good half of it or more is simply research, not something AI can do. But if you're going to use AI to write a page, it's going to need all the elements that come from the research. So you're still going to need copywriters, and copywriters are still going to need copy editors, which are the people that make things flow better, make sure your grammar is made to be broken in copywriting. So just guys, but people like my friend Autumn, who's a copy editor, help, you know, your copies sound better, be consistent, more clear, those kinds of things. You need people like Autumn at the same time. So, you know, it's just really interesting. All of them are coming out. The people I know who know the AI stuff best tend to refer to Jarvis as the best one so far. So I don't have endless money to try all of them. Kind of wish I did. I know that Vito's team has launched Bertha. Yeah. I would be curious to try it. But I will say, Joanna Weed from Copy Hackers likes to say, I was watching one of her Tuesday tutorials one time. She said something about writing 50 headlines to come up with a headline. And I was like, does that apply blog content too? And she said, you should always do it for whatever you write. And it was like a kick to the gut. So the little Canadian woman kicked me in the gut, saying that you need to have 50 headline. You need to write 50 headlines for each headline. I don't know if that's going to be in everybody's capacity, but with AI, you can come up with 50 variations pretty quick. And even if you want to test them for a, not sure I would test on a blog content, but certainly on your home, your major already pages, if you want to test headlines, I mean, AI could be a great way to come up with variations and eliminate or at least streamline your time a little bit. So AI is like a tool. It's like people using Page Builder to build a web page or whatever. So you're not going to do a complete copy or content project probably with AI, but you can speed things up and probably come up with more better variations of headlines than you can in your own head.
So true. Devinder, your thoughts?
I think the problem is not the tool, AI tool, is how it's marketed. Like in case of page builders, like how they are marketed, hey, you just need a page builder. You don't need a designer or a developer to build a website. Now, similar is the case with AI tools. You don't need a brain. You don't need to write anything. They will generate everything. But AI tool is to refine your thoughts. In the end, the main content, the main subject, the main thought will still come from your head, right? So if you cannot produce that good enough, AI tool is as good as AI, right? In the end, don't need artificial intelligence. You need natural intelligence to put your thoughts out.
So true. Ryan, does that make it easier to get content for your customers?
I'm going to disagree with something that Todd said.
Shots fired.
Shots fired. So, part of my business is SEO and writing content. And one of the tools that I picked up a while ago and have added their monthly add-on after I purchased the LTD was Phrase. And this has been a really nice tool to do research and AI content generation to help me write about topics that I'm not a particular expert about. So it will crawl and pull up relevant topics as I'm writing and put an outline together for me to help write a blog article. And that's been an invaluable tool. You still have to do the research and understand what needs to go into the article, but it helps you. It's not going to replace you as a writer, but it's definitely increased my proficiency in writing blog articles for my clients' businesses where I'm not the expert. I certainly write an article and have them preview it. And if I come across a suggestion from the AI writer that they may not have given me in an outline, I ask them, is this relevant? And they're like, yeah, I forgot about that. And that should be in there. So it's been a nice tool to make sure that we're writing relevant content about a subject, but it absolutely doesn't replace me as a writer. I'm not a great writer. So for me, it's been a nice crutch to lean on to improve my writing capabilities. The other nice thing is doing advertisements, particularly social media advertisements, where I can drop in my headline and some short copy and ask the AI to rewrite it and give me variations. Well, I now have 4 split tests with copy. And I will tell you, it's not perfect. I always adjust, but there are some combinations and rephrasing of my original input that have converted better. And if it wasn't for AI giving me that extra nudge with, you might want to phrase it like this, I probably wouldn't have had an ad campaign work as well as it did. So there's certainly some uses for AI in the community, but it's a tool just like anything else. And Devinder and Todd both said that the same thing, that you initiate everything.
What are you disagreeing with me about? I didn't catch that.
Well, I disagreed with you that, you know, one of the tools that I use can do some of your research and start the content.
Okay. You're talking about different kinds of research. The ability to go out and crawl the web and find relevant sources, that's one thing. And that definitely can. But I'm talking about, you know, voice of customer research, survey. And in the future, it may be able to do some of that stuff for sure. I wouldn't be surprised at all, but you know, talking about web copy, I guess more than anything, you were coming to it from a content standpoint. So, although I would like to see, this is something, I guess, in the WordPress community, I'd like to see people in our community don't seem to do this too much with their blog posts, and they tend to do what you're talking about, which is just go out and find relevant sources and so forth. But, and maybe it's a time issue, but one of the best places you can go is interview expert, which is what a journalist does. So if you're talking about something in a field you're not familiar with, obviously you can go out and, you know, find content on the web about it. Right. Or you can go interview someone who's an expert. It's like a journalist saying, man, I need to know more about page builders. Let me interview Devinder. Or I need to know more about web security, and I'm going to interview Robert or Ryan, you know, that kind of thing. So I'd like to see more of that in our community.
One of the things that AI, it's getting better, but it doesn't capture the tone or the customer voice. That's one of the things that I've had a few of my clients when they look at my blog and they actually read it. I was kind of surprised. because nobody likes reading stuff. They just want to ask the question. This is one of Rob's favorite things. There's this thing called Google. Go use it. but a comment that I got back was, I write about my personal experience and business growth because I write my blog for small businesses and nonprofits and tips and things that I've learned over the years and my colleagues have learned. And I share how I've integrated those things and tell a little bit about my story. I kind of learned that from you, Todd, to use some storytelling in my writing, and it's paid off. I've had a couple of clients that said, I like how you relate how you accomplished this task specifically and how it worked for you. And that's something that AI doesn't give you, that personal touch and experience and that tone of your writing. It can help you write some things, but that storytelling, that personal connection, it's not there yet. I'm sure it will be at some point, but not now.
Yeah, my AI tool is Grammarly for now.
Grammarly, yeah. Mine, I think they're moving in that direction. I think I have come across an AI tool that is supposed to help with storytelling. I think even though there is one, it's probably going to be like any other AI tool is going to handle the basics with which you take in, but it can't pull that out of your head. You're talking about, you know, what is it our friend Kim Doyle says? Everything is content. So you're taking a personal experience from business and writing about it and relating, and the business owner relates to that. And that's something that, you know, AI can't really do in that regard. And if you're going to do that, you need to learn how to do storytelling. And there's a lot of ways to do that. Heck, we talked about Chris Lemma. He's got a storytelling course on his website. And I've looked through I haven't looked through the course, but I've looked through the contents, and it's very good from what I can see. Obviously, I recommend Stories That Stick by Kendra Hall as a good way to learn more about storytelling in your business. So there's a lot of ways, but the best way to learn about storytelling is just tell stories. Tell them in your blog posts, tell them in your presentations, tell them in your emails, tell them in your videos and your podcasts. Tell them when you talk to stories or talk to in sales, tell stories.
Sorry. Thanks, Todd. Not to worry. Let's jump into another topic. WordPress is not secure. Ryan, go.
I'm glad you picked on me first. Interestingly enough, I acquired a new client for a couple of websites. One of his websites that he was maintaining by himself on one of the wonderful EIG hosts, who won't be named here, now hosted on my servers. He started having problems with it and couldn't figure it out. I had crawled the site, got into it, got him on a care plan immediately. And I said, okay, we're going to do an audit, and signed him up for that. And I'm glad I did, because it was full of outdated plugins and malware because he didn't keep the site updated. I was able to clear that out and started looking at some things and realized that it was time for a rebuild and starting fresh and just pulling the content out. But WordPress isn't secure. It has holes. They get patched regularly, but I have clients that never log into their websites ever. They're on care plans, and that's why they have me, to make sure that plugins are updated, themes are updated, that my web care, we run a firewall at the server level, at the web application level. We run regular malware scans and make sure that when we do these updates, that nothing breaks. That's the other piece of it. Plugins and themes commoditize development. So you have different development teams, different libraries, all working together. So when you update for security, oops, you just broke all the forms on your website. Nobody can communicate with you. So security is not just throwing up a firewall on the server or on the web application. They are different things, but it's a process of making sure that everything works in tandem and cohesively. Starting in July, I noticed that iThemes had changed their monthly to bi-monthly to weekly security rollouts. And yeah. I commented on Twitter. I said, holy cow, this is 67 vulnerabilities. I think this is the highest I've ever seen. And they said, yep, it sure is. And it's not going to slow down. And since then, they've been publishing new security updates and vulnerabilities weekly. And they've dropped down because development teams are patching things regularly. But is that a bad thing? Does that mean WordPress isn't secure? Not at all. I think WordPress can be secure, and you can harden things and lock things down. But it's a process. Just like your phone software gets regular updates in the background, your custom website needs to do that as well. And because of the nature of the modular building with WordPress, you know, those updates, you have to be careful when you apply them. I mean, we've all had websites break on an update. Thankfully, like the vendor, I'm in the Beaver Builder camp, which has been rock solid. I think I've only had to roll back once in the past 5 years that I've ever, I trust those updates. And there was only one that I had to roll back, and it was fixed in 4 hours. That team is fantastic. Not all plugins are that fast. And, you know, sometimes it'll be days when you have two plugin conflicts, when you roll for a security update, that, you know, you keep your eye on that. And that's part of the process. You know, security isn't, I'm just going to install this plugin like iThemes or WordFence and you're done. Doesn't work like that. Yeah. You have to monitor that. And that's something that a lot of clients that go the DIY route find out after a certain point in time. One of my former clients asked me to look at something. And I said, sure. You know, I know where that is on your site. I logged in since I hadn't been maintaining it. I think they had 31 updates that were several versions behind. Nobody had touched anything. And I just said, you can either pay me to clean this up and get on a care plan, or, you know, we can have a couple hour consulting session and I can tell you what you need to do. They didn't either. And a few months later they were hacked and the website was down for several weeks while they were trying to recover their data.
Yep. It's an ongoing issue, Ryan. As you know, I've gone through it with some clients, and usually when they come running back, my prices go like up and up and up by the day, because they need to learn that, you know, there's a reason we charge what we do, and we have tools and we have expertise to help them, right? And some of these people think, oh, it's easy. I just go push update. I turn auto updates on. I actually turn auto updates off. I don't like them on for multiple reasons. And I actually go in and put code in to stop automated WordPress updates from being deployed unless I deploy them. I really don't like taking chances.
Yeah, absolutely. Auto updates are off on all my sites. The only ones that roll that I've finally become comfortable with are the dot updates from WordPress.
Yep.
They're very minor. Those are the only auto updates that are on. The major updates, I'm not going to update to 5.9, which has been delayed until January, thankfully.
January 25th. Yeah.
It was a nice change from We're gonna have sites update right before the Christmas holiday. I was thankful for that one.
Devinder, your 2 cents on security. You do a lot of development for other agencies. What do you think?
I think security is a very profound topic, and most people are not expert at it, and yet they portray as expert. That is a bigger problem in our ecosystem. Like, even from a normal user to a one-man agency, hey, let's install a plugin and we are done with it. That's the approach most people take. Even if you take that approach, I think most people would fail at is taking backups, because even if your security setup, you know, drags everything down and you have a backup, you can always recover it. And the other problem with backup is most of people take backup on the same server as they're hosted. So it's like peeling the onion, right? So there's so many layers that you need to have understanding of it. Obviously, I'm not a security expert, but since I've done so much work in last 15, 18 years, I've seen so many agents. I've worked with other agencies also, and I've seen how they handle the different setups. Some people outsource it, which is the best way to do it if you do not know what you're doing yourself. And some people just use managed WordPress hosting, and they do very good job at, you know, handling the website data and all that stuff. But then your cost rises because managed hosting is expensive if you're managing like 100 and 200 websites in one go. So security is difficult. Make sure you learn it before you say I'm a security expert. I'm not a security expert, so I'll humbly admit that.
And by the way, let's add, if you've got backups, maybe you should test that you can restore that backup before you
exactly.
actually need it.
Exactly, because which plugin you are using to take backups, even that is a problem. Like you took backup with one plugin, it makes a zip file with a specific Voodoo type extension, and then you try to recover it. WordPress doesn't identify what this file is all about.
So true. So let's use that as a segue. Todd, we're going to sort of talk security, but I want to go broader. You just did an amazing survey on WP care plans for Maine WP. Do you want to talk about that a little bit and we'll segue there?
It's funny. I thought you did want me to talk security at all. He's like, he's ignoring me when it comes to security.
No.
So I'll say this. I'll say this from my standpoint. No, I'm not an expert, but I did work for an agency. I had to see our share of cleanups along the way. So my role in this, we had a server admin. I mean, that's what he did. And he would clean it up. And this, by the way, this was whether it was Drupal or WordPress. We had different kinds of, on that, when I worked for that agency, we had ModX, we had Drupal, we had WordPress. I don't think we had a Joomla, we might have. So there's multiple platforms. And the other thing, developers outside of the WordPress space look at updates a lot differently than WordPress people do. Because I've had a number of people say, well, if you have to update, if you have to constantly update, then you have a problem. Well, WordPress is different, and that's something I think people need to know. If you don't work outside the WordPress space, we had Drupal websites. Drupal is a pain in the butt to update because it's just totally different. WordPress, you push a button. I mean, literally, click something and it updates, auto updates. All this stuff you're talking about, if you back it up well, you know, you make a mistake, you can roll it back. Ryan talked about rolling back Beaver Builder one time in 5 years. WordPress, the process to update for WordPress is 100 times easier than Drupal. Drupal's like an all-night deal to update. I don't know enough about it. But so I think, well, out of the box, WordPress isn't any more secure or less secure than any other platform. There are multiple layers that we all talked about, server level, as well as firewalls and all this other stuff. And so I think people have to understand that it's looked at a little differently outside the WordPress space. Now, back to what you were talking about. The survey, we started that. What is it? Did you have a question about the survey?
Wanted you to talk about in general.
Yeah.
You're working on.
Yeah. It's for an article at Maine WP, which I write at, which is a single dashboard self-hosted for updating WordPress websites. And there's more than one out there, but Maine WP is probably the biggest one that's not managed WP. I pinged this off of all you guys. So the questions, you know, you guys are a very big part of that, helping me get that thing down. But it's just for web care people. So in the Maine WP community, you know, I talked about earlier that people like Ryan have gone more toward web care. I think a lot of the boutique agencies that have the chops to do server admin will actually do that. Now, some other people who are maybe more designers or whatever, they might outsource to Ryan or Rob or whatever, and that's fine. What I was going to say about, let me back up just a second. What I was going to say about web server and security was this. If you're a company listening to this and you're not going to pay Rob or Ryan or whoever your developer is to do that regularly, you need to do one of two things. You need to use a good managed host who will take care of all that for you, Keemstar, WP Engine, or whoever. Or you need to put it on WordPress.com. If you're not going to pay somebody to manage your site, that's my opinion. You guys may throw tomatoes at me or whatever, but you know, server web care costs anywhere from 25 to, you know, 200 plus a month, you know, depending on who's doing the server. That's one of the questions we ask is how much you charge. Then I ask things like, you know, what are add-on services you do? Is it SEO, content creation, you know, paid media, email marketing services, design development, privacy policies? Do you do accessibilities? Shout out to our friend Colleen, who's the big accessibility expert. I've learned a ton about accessibility from Colleen, enough to know that I shouldn't be messing with it. I should send them all to Colleen. Landing pages, social media, you know, so those are some of the questions I ask. I'm not sure if it was Rob or Ryan one, but you had the idea to ask if we included software plugin licenses. So that's going to be interesting. The host you offer, what kind of host. And then there's a few things I added in that I was curious about. If you write a consistent blog, and if you have an email newsletter, and who your target market is. So I do plan on letting that go to the 18th of December. When I was doing the article last week talking about it for Main WP, made that decision to cut it off on the 18th because we're in a good spot now with the answers. And so I think anything from here on is really just adding to value. But if you check the last article at Main WP from me, the link to the survey will be in there. If you're a web cares consultant, I would love your feedback, your answers to that. But web, obviously doing web care, a big part of that is security. And so I know enough to be dangerous and I take care of all my sites and a handful of customer sites. But certainly bigger sites and people with more to lose should be using somebody like Rob or Ryan, in my opinion. So and then our friend Trevor, he's got some really good services on the web care front as well. And he's got a new WASP platform, a website as a service launch engine. So this is going to be interesting to see how all this plays out in the next few years.
Yeah. And since we're in the middle of shameless plug time, which I just absolutely love, Devinder, you've been working on some awards with WP Weekly. Where do those stand? Because we're now at the end of the month. Do we have some winners coming soon?
Yeah, I've been calculating who got how many votes, and I can give you some insights here before I publish it. Like, I think 2,138 something people voted. So awesome. I was expecting 200, but I guess it crossed 2000. So spamming helps a little, I guess. So yeah, and now I'm actually going through the, you know, results, and I think the 22 categories, and I've gone through 8 categories so far, and results have been surprised. There've been few surprises, especially the page builder category. Like Gutenberg is the second popular page builder. Believe it or not. So I think Matt Mullenberg's gamble is paying off. Now people assume and presume and view Gutenberg as a solid page builder. Obviously, it's not a page builder, but you know, with add-ons ecosystem behind Gutenberg now, it definitely can work as a solid page builder. And with a full set editing coming very soon, I'm sure it will match. I think we spent 2021 in, you know, thinking how full set editing will look like, and it's almost there, but not there. And 2022 would be spent in seeing how full set editing as a baby grows up to a toddler, and maybe not yet adult, because it will still take a few years to get there. So coming to awards, it was a surprising, you know, it was a surprise thing that I did it. It just came, a few people suggested that this could be a good idea. So I said, because I've been in this mindset for a few years now. If you have an idea, just implement it. Don't think too much about it, because we spend a few years but thinking it, and that idea becomes stale and not that useful. So it was a surprise thing, and the engagement and the... and the, you know.
I have a question.
Yeah,
can I ask go a ahead. Question, sir?
Sure, of course you can. Go ahead.
Can you tell us the stack you used to do your wards? Like, you know, what did you use? How did technically, yeah. How did you do on the back end?
And that's even more interesting part. Before I tell you that, I've counted almost 6 people have emailed me asking me the same very question. Can you tell me the full walkthrough, how you did it and how you calculating the results and all that? Well, it's a very simple thing. And even Kim Doyle suggested me, hey, you should make a proper video workshop around it and do it, because that would be easier thing. And I might even
charge 10, 15 bucks or a seat.
Why not add another 0? Be greedy, right? So, yeah. So my stack was very simple, to be honest. As you know, Fluent Forms. I've been a Fluent Form user ever since it came out. Like, I bought LTD on the second day or the third day.
Shout out to Jewel.
I think all of us have the LTD of Fluent Forms, right? Mm-hmm. So.
Me too.
So earlier I was using some other form plugins, which I would not name, but I'm now all my client sites, all my personal sites, everything uses Fluent Forms. So what happened is when I was going through this process of, you know, setting up awards, I wanted to first see, can it be technically possible with Fluent Forms? So my only question was, the bigger question was, like, I don't want one person with one email address submitting multiple entries. So how do I restrict one person with one email address to submit only one vote? And call me lazy. I didn't post that question in Facebook group of Fluent Forms. I actually directly messaged Shah Jahan Joel on Messenger and said, I do have this question. Is it possible? And he said, yeah, there's a setting in Fluent Forms and I never knew about it. And he even told me another setting, like, you can also restrict those people by IP address and all that. So all that geekery was already there in Fluent Forms. It was in the form of setting. I just have to click few buttons and I was done with it. That was the only, you know, technical part that I wanted to get sorted, and Fluent Form already had it. So I didn't have to do any, you know, manual code or something. The only thing I did with regard to manual code was styling the, you know, layout so that it looks more easy on eyes, and because there were like more than 200 entries, right? So that can be overwhelming. Earlier I had image for every entry, but loading 200 images on a page and would make the page even longer. So I ditched the image part and went with all text. And I made it optional because not everyone, there were 21 categories, not everyone will vote for everything, right? So earlier I made it optional and people actually liked it. And I got few appreciation emails. Oh, that was easy and quick. It's easier than voting in elections, the real elections. So,
yeah. So do you did it have like a poll module or something you used or what? Or what was the...
No, it was... I just used simple checkbox module within the Fluent Form, but it was styled in a way that when it's not clicked, it will show a minus sign, but when it's clicked, it will show a tick sign. So it was all CSS magic behind it. So yesterday, I downloaded all the results as a Excel file, uploaded on Google Drive, and then I used to use Excel long time back, so I forgot how to use formulas and all that. So I Googled, Google is your best friend. So I found a function. So that function helped me a lot. Like, it saved me time. So I just copy one column, say page builders and all the entries under page builder, that column, just copy in a blank Excel sheet and then run that formula. And in 1 second, I'll know how many votes Beaver Builder got, how many votes Elementor got, and how many votes Gutenberg got.
I would love to see them do a poll module. I did a poll in November at Conway Scene, and I used Gravity Forms on that site. I have an old developer's license for Gravity Forms, and they've grandfathered me in every year. And so I keep using that for most of my sites, even though I use Fluent Forms for most of my client sites. I love both.
You can do the same thing with Gravity Forms also. So,
But for the Conway Scene site, I did. They're basically 3 polls, and I ran it completely through Gravity Forms. And the back end, the showing results is nicer than anything I would do. it was very helpful. No need to go out and get any other plugin, you know, to do a poll.
Yeah, some people suggested, why don't you show live results like in while voting? I thought that that is technically possible, but I don't want to influence things like, oh, Elementor is one vote behind. Let's get all Elementor employees and let's vote for it.
I think in what you were doing, I think it's right not to show. I was doing Thanksgiving food, okay? Results, you know, after you click, I like turkey instead of ham. It's not as big of a deal as Elementor versus Beaver Builder, I don't think. So we did have one surprise.
But in all transparency, I plan to publish all the results. I don't know how it will be received. Like every vote that went to every product, it will be listed on the page. So people can make out their own analysis and judgment, seeing those numbers. Obviously, all those numbers came from people who voted. So I have nothing to hide. Like it will be all transparent. Everything will be there. So there will be three winners in each category, gold, silver, and bronze. All WordPress Olympics in progress, right?
Yeah. And the vendor takes bribes in US dollars sent to his Swiss bank.
Buy him a coffee.
The vendor, thanks for sharing that. Ryan, since we're in plug time, is there anything you want to talk about that you've been working on or anything interesting?
Interestingly enough, I'm probably the holdout on Fluent Forms, and partly Todd mentioned the old developer license with Gravity Forms. I've got some really complex forms that I've done with Gravity, and interestingly enough, I'm using it to populate some pods. Mm-hmm. You know, which recently released their new version. Want to give a shout out to the pods team with the newly released version, all new back end that is nice and new. And another shout out to Gravity Forms for fully funding the 2.9 development for repeatable fields.
Yeah.
So been working on some nice integrations with front-end forms and populating custom post types through pods to display dynamic data. And that's dynamic data is a big part of why I'm still a little bit of a holdout on Gutenberg. Beaver Builder just makes it so easy with the integration with Beaver Themer, pods, Gravity Forms. Those things together can really make front-end submissions to drive dynamic content on your website seamlessly, just a snap once you get everything running. So got that long-term project. It's been over the last year plus that will be launched in January. I'm very, very fully looking forward to clearing my schedule out. But it's December's kind of my cleanup time. I usually look forward into the next year, and my crystal ball email comes out around the new year on here's what I see in the new year. And there's been a lot of good food for thought in our discussion. So still collecting thoughts and just looking forward at more web care and managed services. I think, as we look at page builders and Gutenberg, getting a website isn't difficult. Getting a website that looks nice, it's getting easier. Getting a website that looks nice is actually found on Google and does what you want it to properly, that's still a challenge. So,
I agree.
That's where I'm hedging my bets, is helping those clients that actually want their website to be a functional marketing tool. Yeah. So that's kind of my goal and shift, is to be that continued communications partner going forward.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention, it's a shame he's not here. He had a family emergency come up, but AJ Morris of the Gravity Forms was originally going to join us this morning. And AJ was a big part of that pods integration project for the last 6 months. I've had countless discussions with AJ. We were actually talking about it a couple of days ago and all the work that went into it. And I'm sure I'll get him on in the new year, but a special shout out to AJ and all the work his team made on making that integration with pods happen. So You know, he's a really approachable guy. And if you need to talk to him about the integration, AJ's on Twitter is probably the best place to get a hold of him. And the panel wishes your family well. So thanks, AJ. I'm not going to avoid the Gutenberg topic. I've kind of danced around it for an hour, and I think we need to have a bit of a chat out. So I think one of the things that's helped in the last while at Automattic is they did some smart things like hiring Birgit Polly Hack up there, who runs Gutenberg Times. They've now hired a lead whose name escapes me. I'm sorry to oversee the Gutenberg relationships. They're reaching out to more the host relationship people to have those discussions. I know I've had several discussions with people up at Automattic about Gutenberg lately, and they're also reaching out to several podcasters, people like Bob Dunn, people like myself, people like Matt Medeiros, you know, people like Jeff Chandler. These are people that are all well respected in the community and matter. And I think they're starting to listen a little bit. And point and check, they took 5.9 instead of ramming it down us 2 weeks before Christmas. And I've got a WooCommerce site with 350 products on it. And the last thing I want to see is 5.9 go in before Christmas Day, because Ryan's nodding his head, because that's a recipe for disaster. And so they delayed that to the 25th, which will be full site editing. And I think that release is going to have its challenges. So I'm going to open the floor up and let's start with Todd and talk about Gutenberg a little bit. But before we do, let's digress one bit. Well, I think of it. Devinder mentioned an issue where he said, you know, when you build your Gutenberg stack, that you're building things around Gutenberg. So is it any different than building a page builder stack and a shortcode stack? So now we've gone to Gutenberg blocks, and you kind of have to decide in the Gutenberg world where your eggs sit, so to speak. So I know with myself, I'm all in with Cadence. I'm a Cadence form, Cadence theme, Cadence blocks, and then I've gone with Editor Plus by Extendify. Shout out to Spencer Foreman for helping refine that stack a little bit. But the way I look at it is, it's no different than what's your Beaver Builder stack and your add-ons, what's your Elementor stack and your add-ons. Todd, take that one.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I know there was a lot of issues when Gutenberg first came out, and I heard everything on Twitter, and there were a lot of good, hopefully some of that stuff has changed and gotten better. I'm not a developer, so I can't tell you some of that. I know that accessibility was one issue with it. I don't know if they've addressed that very well yet or not, but hopefully they have. But having been someone who's written in other environments, including at one time a lot of Medium, and then if you go LinkedIn, the WordPress editor was outdated in how it looked and what it did. And I understand they were using the old TinyMC, Tiny Mice, whatever, and it's probably less bloated that way. As a regular old person who has a website that Ryan or Devinder or Rob developed for you, you're kind of limited with those small that old editor and what you can do. Now, there's good and bad with that, right? You know, I mean, remember back in the GeoCity days when we were building websites and we learned how to add those moving GIFs to the email box that danced and all that kind of stuff, because we could, right? And they really were terrible. I'm thinking about this a little bit differently. And I usually fall in the middle on some of this stuff. If you hand, especially a big website with multiple authors, over to somebody with Gutenberg and they can do all this stuff to it, you could very quickly kill the vibe and the look of a site, because they do all this stuff inside the box where the blog can go. you know, it's it, but like anything, I guess maybe it has to come down to roles. Maybe you give some of that stuff to an editor role rather than an author role, you know. But hey, you got half your, for instance, let's take a, one thing I thought was really cool early on was that you could make a big S, you know, on the first word. I can't drop.
Whoa, I guess it's just me.
Okay, think... let's keep talking about Gutenberg now.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody's back, coming now. Back.
Okay, now we should keep quiet. Todd is here.
Okay, back to what I said. The drop cap, I think, is a cool thing. The drop cap. The problem is if you've got multi authors on a blog, and let's say one or two people want to use the drop cap on every single blog, that the other two or three don't. You've killed consistency. So I don't know. I'm going back and forth. I think I do like the fact that the one thing about Gutenberg I was excited about was we're trying to put a modern editor in. And I thought that was good. And I thought that was good because I at one time I'd written articles on Medium and LinkedIn and they use a modern editor. And so I thought that's good. We're trying to update the editor because the old editor is really limited. In some ways, it's more developer friendly. If you know how to add some code on the back end, you can do all these things we're talking about. But with Gutenberg, I still think there's some issues with the fact that, you know, the average person may not know how to use the blocks. So I don't know. I like Gutenberg in general. I like there's some things you can do. I've played around with using it on pages. And so one of the things you guys know, talking about projects, I have a local website called Conway Scene. And I had done the holiday gift guide in years past, had the vendor help me because those were all Beaver Builder page. That was the Beaver Builder page. So I would always refer to the vendor the last couple of years on that. And this year I thought, man, I think this really needs to be done with custom post ops. We're up to 26 or 27 gifts now. I mean, just a single 3-column page with Beaver Builders kind of, I want to be able to like have a little search capability, you know, like, okay, all the books, you know, all the, these kind of gifts. And so we're up to 26, 27 gifts, might be over 30 before it's over with. So I decided to do custom post ops. Now I think we've established that I'm not the developer. You guys are. I like the ideal custom post op, but I can never display them worth a darn. And, so Devender installed pods for me and I just could never make that work right. And then, so I finally settled on Toolset because it gives me the ability to kind of do almost a page builder top display, and it would allow me to do it within blocks. So the gift guide this time is done with Toolset CPT on a Gutenberg page. When I got done with that, after figured out, I think this is pretty nice, but I think I would have rather done it with Beaver Builder, to be quite honest with you. But there are a lot of things. I think your regular old internal pages, you can really do a nice job with Gutenberg, especially if you have the design chops to do that. I've learned a lot from Joe Casabana, just watching his lives, because he'll work with Gutenberg. And I really, watching him really helped me begin to wrap my brain around how Gutenberg worked, and as more than just a writing editor. So I like Gutenberg as another option.
I'm gonna hang on to
my page builder, my Beaver Builder though.
I would agree, Todd, just to put it out there. The latest release at Cadence, you talked accessibility. They actually built in some new accessibility functions right in the theme. So Cadence has certainly recognized that. Ryan, your thoughts around Gutenberg, my favorite topic.
Are you sure you really want me to share my thoughts on Gutenberg?
You're allowed to share your thoughts on Gutenberg.
This Silence him. Point. He's going to say bad things. Silence him. He is not allowed to speak.
Yeah. No, go ahead. You're allowed to share.
You know, from a a blog editor. I mean, the Tiny MCE editor, you know, Todd touched on this, is just old, outdated, and it needed an update. From a blog writing experience and tool, it's still not a good writing experience. You know, my clients that write their own blogs still struggle with it, and actually more so with the options that the blog editor has introduced. So my advice is write your blog in Google Docs, cut and paste it into Gutenberg, which works well, and then add your images later. It's still a process where we really should be able to do that right in the block editor. And
I agree.
Part of the problem is the block editor is being pushed as, you know, a page builder replacement and, you know, a tool to get WordPress.com on the level of Squarespace or Weebly or, you know, some of the other site builder tools. I think it's a good initiative because the old editor sucked. I mean, you can't do enough with it, but to be able to be a really good writing tool, it needs some help. So I use it for all my blogs. I love it. And it's such an improvement. There are so many more things inside that blocked space for the blog that it's been great. As a whole, for a site building tool, it's not working for me right now with some of the dynamic data that I've done, and you know, that's still lagging behind. So my tool of choice is still Beaver Builder. And I just noticed, you know, I talked about platform building, that Beaver Builder just recently announced, I think this morning, that they partnered with Cloudways to be able to launch Cloudways Droplet with Beaver Builder pre-installed. So, you know, the platform building out there is taking hold in different facets. So Gutenberg's not going to be the only option out there. I think it's providing competition for the page builders, and I think all of them will improve. But as a whole, I'm probably going to be one of those laggards because I have to support sites that I've built that are extremely complex with page builders. Yep. So from a page building experience, it'll be a while before I pick it up as a stack. But from a blog writing experience, it's immensely more flexible and offers much more rich content editing within that editor space.
No,
but I find my clients still struggle with it.
I agree with you, Ryan. Like, the only way you can do it as a page builder experience is go to an add-on, like go to something like Cadence Box, Studio Press Box, Ultimate Box. That's the only way. If you're running with native Gutenberg, I don't think you can come close personally. And that's
in that instance, you're just extending it and you're kind of locked into that block set. So it's just like using a page builder. That's why I see Gutenberg as competition for page builders, at least right now, especially with the theme add-ons like Cadence, mm-hmm. you know, Generate Press, those options out there. It's still in its infancy. So, like Devinder touched on, we'll see what full site editing brings.
Yep.
I'm really looking forward to see what that brings, but I don't think I'll be using it to any extent when 5.9 comes out.
Yep. Devinder, do you have anything you want to add to what you've already thrown out with Gutenberg, or are you?
I think Ryan just mentioned full site editing, right? We are already using full site editing with Beaver Themer in Beaver Builder, and you can do the same thing in Elementor and other page builders. It's not something that's come out that would be revolutionary. Obviously, the way they will implement will be a little different in terms of UI and stuff. Now, scaling back to the introduction of Gutenberg, it was supposed to be a replacement for the classic editor. And it definitely is an improvement over Classic Editor, but it still makes me a little uncomfortable when I have to drag things because I'm not confident it will land on the right place. Like, compare that to the drag and drop experience Elementor gives you or Beaver Builder gives you. It's just I don't have confidence in doing that, to be honest, and it generally lands in a wrong place. So instead of dragging, I usually copy paste and then delete the previous row thing. And yes, it started as an editor, but now it's being marketed as, not marketed, but that's how it's being shouted as, like, page builder. But it's still got a long way to do it. If you do not know CSS, you just cannot control things, the layout that's been made in Gutenberg, or you have to use add-on. Now, other thing that's being said about Gutenberg very vehemently and loudly is, like, it's the most optimized way to build a website. I think that's incorrect. Why? Because if you're building a small 5-page website and it's just few images, then Gutenberg is perfect for you. But client websites are not like that. I believe people who are talking have done client website. They are not like that. Clients have all kinds of requirements. They need all kinds of features. If you're using Gutenberg as it is, it's fine. But when you want to cater to client requirements, either you have to put the manual scripts or manual code to fulfill that requirement, or you will add add-ons of Gutenberg. And when you add these things to the mix, mind you, the optimization is not to the extent what people say it's optimized. It's almost same as a page builder around the corner sitting in the ecosystem. So all those things, it's easy. Well, it's easy, definitely easier than classic editor, but is it easy than the established page builder in terms of drag and drop? No, it isn't. Now, is it optimized? Yes, it's optimized. If you only use core Gutenberg and you can splash a little bit of PHP and CSS, but guess what? How many clients want to do that? I guess zero, at least in my case. So Gutenberg got a long way to do it because they need to get the basics right. Like, if you want to have Gutenberg, core Gutenberg, to do layouts, they need to have padding and margins and responsive layouts. Like, that is a must. Without that, and they have to have for every element, because without that, it's, you are still depending on other add-ons for Gutenberg. So it's almost like a page builder package.
That I would wholeheartedly agree on that one. Having taken the experiment, and I've had many discussions with David McCann over the last while, because David's kind of the page builder guru, right? Or one of them, where he compares page builders, and Devinder's rolling his eyes at me as we speak.
He's also helped me with my CPT. Yeah. Experience, yeah. You know, as well. So David's a good guy,
and a shout out to him. And we've had many discussion where I made a decision back in September to take my agency website and gradually move it to Gutenberg. And let me tell you, it's been an interesting experience, to say the least. If you're not going to go with add-ons, and I kind of mentioned my stack earlier in this conversation, you're not going to get there. So you got to think about going with add-ons. And then, you know, the argument with page builders from my perspective is, well, if you move from Beaver Builder to native WordPress, you have a problem. Well, guess what? If you move from Cadence with Gutenberg to native WordPress, you got a problem too. The problem doesn't go away. I mean, there's many block patterns that run that if you're not running Editor Plus by Extendify, they won't work. So there you go. I mean, it's the same problem. It's just moved from one part of the ecosystem to another. And I think you have to kind of choose what works for you, really. And let's stop all this WordPress fighting over Gutenberg and just say, okay, if you want to run Beaver Builder, fine. If you want to run Gutenberg, fine. If you want to run Elementor, fine. Somebody had a comment. Who was it? No?
Oh, no? I was just going to comment that we're talking about Gutenberg as if it's WordPress. It's not. Yeah. It's
just part of it.
It's on top of WordPress.
You can easily eliminate Gutenberg, use ACF, install Elementor, Beaver Builder. There's so many things you can use to bypass Gutenberg. So WordPress is still there. And use tools that work for you, not for your neighbor.
Yep. And stop the shiny tool syndrome, right, D?
Oh, yeah. I've stopped that long time. You know, I've not purchased anything from MapSuper in a while now, so.
Yeah, but did you purchase anything for Black Friday or Cyber Monday?
Nope. I only renewed my Beaver Builder. That's it. I was sick. That's a benefit of being sick during Black Friday.
There you go.
I only bought Vanish VPN, and that was the end of that for me. So let's kind of wrap this up. Let's go around the table real quickly and see and mention one thing you want to see going into WordPress in 2022. Let's start with Ryan.
I touched on it earlier, and I just mentioned that Gutenberg sits on top of WordPress. I'd like to see Core get some love and some updates. I'd like to see the dashboard get some of those updates. It's long overdue. And I think the Gutenberg team is doing some nice things, but let's give Core some love. Let's roll out some of those updates to WordPress as a whole, so that those of us that build elsewise can still move forward. And that benefits not just people like me who use Beaver Builder, but others that use Gutenberg or one of the Box add-ons or Elementor or Oxygen. It only helps the entire community. So yeah, that's what I'd really like to see change a little bit, is giving Core some love and looking at the community as a whole and stopping this complaining about Gutenberg and look at WordPress Core again.
Yeah. So I would agree.
Hopefully it gets a little more. Yeah. Hopefully in 22, it gets a little more love. I think that's the feeling on a lot of the disgruntled people or the people that are pro Gutenberg. I think we all would like to see that. So that's kind of my look into 22 on WordPress.
And let's start with the media library, right, Ryan? Like the most unloved portion of the whole WordPress backend, as far as I'm concerned.
It is. I've tried a number of different add-ons, and they help, but that's a huge project, and that's just one part of Core that needs some love. Let's give Core some love in 22.
Yeah, Devinder, your thought, what do you want to see in 2022?
I think the dashboard, as Ryan pointed out, definitely needs an update. It still looks outdated. Obviously, they can build one on Blocks Editor and, mimic that. But I don't know how much love that will get. But more than, looks, I think the functionality of the dashboard, especially the messages various third-party plugins, generate within the dashboard. Now, that's annoying to the core, to be honest. And there has to be some standardization for everyone without exception, whether you are on the free or paid, like your message appear in a specific area in the dashboard or specific section under, say, tools or settings, and not cloud your whole dashboard, because not everyone will install a plugin to block messages, and blocking these messages actually harm more than because you are missing on important updates. And there has to be distinguished between an update and a promotional message. Obviously, you get the point. Like, you've installed a free plugin and they have all the rights to, promote their pro version, which is given, but there has to be some standardization. Like, you can't have half of the screen being covered by that. And if you come out of the dashboard, I think the talk of having more diversity under representation and all that, which is more popular in US than here, I think that's good, but I only see talk rather than the action is very little, to be honest, if you see from the distance. I hope people take more action on that. And other than that, it's good. Like, you still have to use capital P in WordPress. You can't use... Otherwise, Matt Medeiros would be angry.
Oh, I'm sure. Todd, what would you like to see in 2022?
Man, those two, from a technical standpoint, I think are very good. What Ryan and the vendors said would be very... I do think that the notifications can be a little crowded there in the dashboard. So dashboard love, I like that. For me, I would just say, I'm going to use two words, and they're basically the same thing: communication and community. The word community comes, or word communication comes from me, or there's the word community comes from communication, if I remember right. So let's do a better job with communication in general, which should help facilitate better community. But, just as I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, The two things we got to keep as we mature is the ability to innovate, so nimble, being nimble on the front end, and then community. And I think Paul Lacy made that call. And the way to do that is to do a better job with communication, both internally within the WordPress community, but also things like, we need to, in some ways, we need to update our content game and our web copy game. They're behind in a lot of ways. And that's kind of an outward communication, if you will, the outreach part of it. But I think one of the things that's so cool about WordPress, it is built on a platform that celebrates communication, right? Blogging for everyone. I think it was the early mantra of WordPress. So, and I think we got some good people in place to help with that. Let's just keep working on that and keeping those lines open, because even if you disagree with something, that doesn't mean that you should be cut out of the communication. We should all try to find a way to continue. You know, we're not going to agree with every direction, right? You know, there's some people that'll never agree with the whole Gutenberg thing, but make the best of it. And we just need to keep communication important. So our community is important. So I think Rob fell asleep.
No, I'm here. I said for 2022, I think for me, is I care so much about this community. It's one of the things that keeps me in it and talking to people like you guys and other people. And frankly, doing a podcast. I mean, one of the coolest things, and Devinder will tell you this, having done his own, is when you podcast, you get to meet all kinds of amazing, real people. And that builds relationships. And we need to keep building those relationships.
And I want to restart it very soon. But I'm not sure in which format. But it's coming in next year. So let's see.
Let's get Devinder there. We need to. So he brings a lot to the table. So that's kind of where I'm at. Devinder, if anybody wants to talk to you, where's the best way? Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Slack.
No,
we
Slack.
Know how much you like Slack. Where's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, I, Devinder, I as in India or iPhone, followed by Devinder, D-A-V-I-N-D-E-R. You can go to idevinder.com, which has a half-baked page with listing of all the SMAP projects that I run. And if you really want to connect with me on social, just follow Idevinder on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. Yeah, that's enough, I guess.
That's enough. Ryan, where can people contact you?
You can hit me up at One Dog Solutions on any major social media platform. And DMs are always open, or check out my website at onedog.solutions.
And Todd, where's the best way to get a hold of you?
I like Twitter. I do communicate on, and I do work on Facebook a lot. I actually just became friends with one of our mutual WordPress friends on Facebook, but, Twitter is what I really like to like, 'cause it's so much fun to, you know, to try to come up with something in 280 characters or whatever it is. And I do DM as well. So I like Twitter, but I'm on LinkedIn and Facebook as well. And copyflight.com is my website.
Yeah. And I just want to, just sort of quick shout out to Patricia. She says to us, I just caught up with you guys. Thanks. Thanks for watching. We appreciate it. So, you know, all I want to do as we go into December is kind of say thank you three for inspiration over the year. Thank you to other mutual people like Bob Dunn, by the way. Watch the Doodoo train from Washington to the state of the word if you're interested. Shout out to Bob.
People Bob like is the goat.
Yeah, people like Kathy's aunt. Kathy, we hope you're doing better with your husband. We know you've been through some trials. People like Matt Badiros, people like Joe Casabono, people like, I'm going to forget people. I know that. Paul Lacy.
Burgett.
You know, Paul, we all know, as Nathan says, you're a bit of a traitor, but you know where that's coming from. My friend Burgett, and the list goes on. and my colleague in the LinkedIn project, Courtney Robertson. There's so many great people, Brian Gardner, I mean, I could go on all day, who have made this what it is. And thanks, guys. And thank you all for,
And HeroPress.
And somebody, and Patricia says, don't forget HeroPress. Yeah.
No question. Kate and Topher.
Kate and Topher.
They do a lot of great stuff. And, you know, the Corey Millers of the world and so
and
on.
What, and the WordFest event is coming back next year, and it's coming back twice.
Yes, it's coming back twice. So thank you, guys. Thanks for watching. Thanks for everybody. Have a great day. Be well.
Bye-bye.
A very special thank you to Devinder, Todd, and Ryan for joining me on this special live podcast that we did. I hope you enjoyed reflecting on year 2021 in WordPress as much as we did bringing it to you. Thank you for listening to this edition of the SDM Show. The SDM Show is brought to you by Rob Cairns and Stunning Digital Marketing. For more information about Rob Cairns and Stunning Digital Marketing, go to stunningdigitalmarketing.info. From here, you can connect to us on social media, go to our website, and even go to the podcast to subscribe. This podcast is dedicated to my late father, Bruce Cairns. Dad, I miss you very much. Keep your feet on the ground. Keep reaching for the stars. Make your business succeed.